Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Welcome back to Truth and Justice. You are tuned into the Friday follow-up for Season 18, Episode 1, Know Your Rights. This week's main episode was extremely informative one that, like it or not, many of us needed to hear. Bob broke down many misconceptions with our rights as American citizens. My name is Zach Weaver, and as always, I'm joined by Bob Ruff and Janet Varney, and the three of us have a lot to talk about this week. But before we get into that, I do know we have a little bit of housekeeping leading in today's follow-up.
Yeah, well, it's not really housekeeping. I just wanted to, this is going to flow a little differently than normal. There was a very triggering material that we talked about, that I talked about in this week's episode. It was something that, you know, I had to think long and hard about before even bringing it up. I, as you know, ultimately decided to bring it up. I had in my mind that, you know, I'm sticking to the purpose of the episode. For those of you that have been around, you know that I was planning this episode before the incident in Minneapolis ever happened. That it was just, when it did happen, it fit too much into it. And I had too many questions about it to, as I said, like, I can't pretend that that's not relevant and to bring up as a real world example of some of the things that we're talking about. And so this is the way this is shaking out is the way I expected it to shake out, which was I'm going to stick to breaking down the laws and the rights and how they apply in these situations. I'm not going to get into litigating that incident and going through those specific details or getting into my thoughts on ICE in the episode, because that just wasn't what the episode was about. One, and two, I also knew that we would have the opportunity here where we can talk a little more freely about that stuff in the follow-up episode. But I just want to make clear that, you know, based on, you know, a lot of the questions, a lot of the feedback that we got, that, you know, it was intentional on my part. Now, if you notice, I never said Renee Good's name. I never talked to, you know, I didn't get into the specifics of it. And that was on purpose because I really wanted to focus on the case law. So what I hope that everyone took away from the episode, what my intent was very simply to point out where your rights are and where your risks are. And you'll see from some of the questions and things that we're going to be discussing today, a lot of people, I think that, I'll just say, what I want to say is that some people like heard what they were going to hear as soon as like I started talking about this topic rather than hearing what I was saying. So I just want to make clear, and I don't fault anybody for that. This is, as I said, is an extremely triggering topic. What I just want to be clear is, you know, in no way was I telling anyone what to do or telling one what they shouldn't do or making a judgment call on what's right and wrong. I'll get into some of that here today. I'm going to not get into a whole lot of that here today, But the point was to say, these are, you know, if you take these actions, these are risks that you're taking. If you're okay with taking those risks, I have all the respect in the world for you for doing that. I just want to be clear about that. Nowhere am I suggesting that because of these risks, you shouldn't do something. I just want to make sure that we're clear. And the reason for it and the purpose behind doing the episode and doing it the way that I did it was because of the questions that I was getting, where I was getting the impression, and then also, as I mentioned, from my own kids, that some people didn't fully understand what those risks were and had a misconception about what any the risk they may be taking. So I just want to be clear, that's what the episode was intended to be about. That is what it was about. And with that being said, we'll go ahead and move on. And before we get into like a litany, we had 70 comments on the follow-up thread. Obviously, we can't get through all those. So we kind of condensed a lot of that. And I'll let Janet kind of explain where we're going next before we get into some very specific listener questions.
Let's just clarify a few things, okay? And this is sort of based on some of the feedback in an attempt to want to make sure everyone is represented. In this episode, you pointed out that ICE deported millions of people during previous Democrat administrations. Some people felt that this was you implying that you only take issue with ICE operations now because of partisan politics. Can you expand and explain some of your reasoning for making that reference?
Yeah, I can. And I want to make clear, too, like these kind of first few, I think there's five big points here. These were like main themes where there were like several people were asking some version of these questions.
Yeah, sorry if I wasn't clear about that. But that's what I meant by saying, like, we just want to kind of try to represent as many people as we can by kind of turning these into themes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so one of the common things, and a lot of people, and I want to say this first, I should have said this up top. One thing that I noticed shortly before we came in here to record, because I was going through all these, I mean, we got all the Facebook comments and different social media comments and DMs and emails and all the different feedback that I've received. A lot of it seemed, you know, negative in the fact that people didn't like something I was saying. But one thing I did notice when I was going through them all is something that really, really, really impressed me about our audience is nobody was nasty or mean-spirited about anything. There was a lot of discussion. There weren't a lot of hurling of insults, anything like that. So I just do want to say that I do very much appreciate that and appreciate the conversation. But one of these themes that came in a lot, as Janet just said, was, you know, well, you know, it was what, even though I said that this is not a whataboutism, people said it is whataboutism when you're saying, well, you didn't have a problem when, you know, Obama or Biden was utilizing ICE to deport people. I want to make clear what my purpose there is. It was not to say it's only because there's a Republican in office now that you have a problem with that. Not at all. My point was, and this comes from my own personal method of persuasive argument, whether it's written or spoken or however you're trying to persuade somebody, because ultimately that's what needs it. We need to persuade an overwhelming majority of people that what's happening right now is wrong. And one of the things that I always try to do and that I was trying to get across there is if you hyperbolize an argument, you lose credibility and you open yourself up for an easy counterargument for people to chop your legs at. So my point wasn't, well, you only care now because of this. My point was ICE was operating at that time, meaning there are parts of ICE's job that most of us, I think, agree should exist. That was it. Like they are legitimate in the way that there are some of their operations that most of us don't have a problem with. So if we make our argument, all ICE is bad, all ICE needs to be stopped, all ICE should be abolished, nothing they're doing is okay, it opens the door up. And I understand the sentiment, because things have gotten, in my opinion, completely out of control with ICE right now. I do not condone anything that's happening. I do not condone most of what's happening right now. I did it my own self. But if as soon as you say everything they're doing is bad, they shouldn't be operating at all, my fear is that that opens up for the other side to very quickly throw their whataboutism. It's like, well, they're finding and deporting people who are you doing human sex trafficking over the borders. You don't think we should do that, right? You see what I'm saying? Or or bringing in drugs or guns or whatever, or they're child sex predators or whatever they are. It just opens the door if we're saying all is bad, that it makes it very easy for them to attack your credibility with things like that. So, and you can agree or disagree with that. I just want to make clear that my point was not, well, you only care now because it's a Republican. My point was, I think if we really think about it, most of us probably agree there are things that ICE does that we do think they should be doing. And the point is to focus our argument and focus our protest and focus our activism on the things we do have a problem with. Because as soon as you start painting with a broad brush, it just makes it so the argument gets lost in the fray of social media. Hope that makes sense.
It does. That was not my favorite part of the episode either, but because it triggers me, yeah. And so I really understand how people feel, but I do also accept and understand. And to be honest with you, I think probably a lot of people listening to this right now are like, Bob, I actually don't know anything that they're doing right now that I think is good. Or like that it feels like during the defund the police era, there's this feeling of like everything has to change fast now. We have to tear everything down and build it back up again. Or what are we even doing? And how do we call ourselves a civilized country? And I think it's just hard to hear that stuff without having it kind of push a button. And I think my instinct was to be like, honestly, Bob, I just don't know how I feel. Like, I don't know how I feel about anything else, because it doesn't seem like anything else matters or is being discussed, because all of this stuff is so front and center. And I don't want to think about anything else that this organization might have done or be doing right now, because I don't want it to seem like I'm excusing anything. So I get it. Right. I mean, I think, I know that's not what you were saying, but I don't even know. Like, I am in such an emotional place right now. I'm just being honest, because I do want the listeners to understand that, like, we get it. I'm in such an emotional place right now that I don't even know if I can stand next to you and say that, like, most of the time I'm okay with ICE. I mean, I live in Los Angeles. ICE has been a bad word for the 20 years I've lived there.
Yeah.
Whether it's the Obama administration, whether it's the Biden mm-hmm. administration, whether it's the Trump administration, a lot of people do not like what happens near the borders, at the borders. And there are a lot of people who feel, yes, we have to figure out immigration and safety for citizens and beyond. But like people are just ready to throw everything out at this point. Like they're so exasperated. And I get that.
And I 100%, and I want to make clear too, that I fully understand the sentiment. And I'm not even saying that I'm right. What I'm talking about is more from a perspective of strategizing, how do we reach people?
Right.
And I spend a lot of time, you know, if you know anybody that follows me on social media, I don't post, I very rarely post anything about anything like activism, things like that, because I personally don't think it's effective. But I spend a lot of time like watching and researching and trying to see like, how are people actually reacting to this, and what are the actual effects of what we're doing? And so I tend to have a very, and I don't know, I think that a lot of that comes from me, and we'll talk about this more in some of the other issues that are going to come up. Some of that may just be from me living in a world, in like my previous career, where like I have to constantly, in very short order, assess risk, develop a strategy that's going to be effective, and implement it. And so for me, I'm it's not about how I feel about the topic. It's about what's going to be an effective argument, and what have I seen that has been an ineffective argument, and what have I seen that is ineffective to persuade people. So that's what, and what I want to make sure that I'm clear about is, you guys are tuning in. It always feels weird for me, because I don't think I don't ever have the what the hell does my opinion matter moments. And then I have to kind of remind myself of this, like, well, I mean, you guys asked me the question and tuned in. So somebody wants to hear my opinion, but just know it's just my opinion. And it is not my opinion on the ICE tactics and what's happening. It is my opinion on how we most effectively can persuade the masses to put a stop to it.
Right. And other people have different opinions about what those are. And you're not saying that you're right and they're wrong. You're saying like, that's the place you were coming from. Let's move on to, because we're kind of already right, we're hovering around right there. Some listeners' comments indicated that they felt like your overall position on ICE in this episode, particularly in Minneapolis right now, came across as kind of a, you know, they're just doing their job. We shouldn't interfere. Is that your position? I'm going to quickly say, of all the things I might have like bristled at in this episode, I didn't get that impression at all. But I want to respect people who took away that feeling.
Yeah. And I want to clear it up. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, it is. And I've had many listeners who live in Minneapolis and the Twin Cities that are like writing in and telling me what's going on. Like it's a war zone there. I mean, they're sitting out in the parking lots of Home Depot, rounding people up, anyone that looks suspicious. They're like, it is. I fully understand why people are up in arms and are doing the things they're doing to try to put a stop to it and try to intervene. 100%. I do not condone any of that. I don't think they're just doing their job. I think that the way all this is being carried out is horrific. This is kind of what I was saying at the top of the episode. My purpose is to say, I just don't want, I mean, you carry on and keep doing exactly what you're doing if you're comfortable with that. My only purpose was to say, just know you're taking a risk. And if you're okay with that risk of being, and as I said, getting shot should not be the risk. But you are taking a risk of being detained, being arrested, being charged for obstructing. And if you have taken account of that and you are comfortable with the risk because you think it's worth it, then by all means, continue doing what you're doing. There was not at all me. I didn't say this. I didn't mean this at all that, oh, they're just doing their job. Leave them alone. They've got a job to do. That's not my position. I don't think the job, my personal feeling, is I don't think the job they're doing is lawful in a lot of cases.
In my opinion, and you can tell me I'm wrong about this, but I know you very well. You're one of my best friends. Zach, this goes for you too, but and you can jump in whenever you want, if you want. I know,
I'm so uncomfortable with this whole situation that I'm letting you guys take the reins. I've got other opinions on the episode. I have other opinions on this episode for the other three quarters of the episode that we can talk about when we get there. But as far as this goes, have at it.
Okay. Well, here's what I'm going to say. I really think that your daughter telling you that her understanding of things was that, like, maybe nothing bad could happen because this is not a legitimate law enforcement agency, I think that scared the shit out of you. You said that. I think it's it was a really emotional decision to make to be willing to wade into this. And I think, and I know that the listener, I think the combination, really, truly, the combination of you seeing that and having your daughter express something that made you feel like she could put herself in danger and unknowingly and be saying, but I saw on social media that I could do this. I thought that was okay. I think that scared the shit out of you. And I think that you're one of your triggers is when you see something specifically on social media that feels irresponsible and dangerous and potentially push button-y, like if I push your buttons enough, you'll go out and do this thing. I think that it makes you really uncomfortable. And that is that's why you do what you do now, why you are in the pursuit of truth and justice. And so I think your intentions are very noble, but I just wanted to acknowledge, but I think that was that I think it's really hard. It would be hard for you to imagine someone who listens to this podcast, seeing something online, going out, thinking you felt that way or that you also thought, oh, I didn't know anything could happen. Or I didn't know. More importantly, to know that someone in that position like feels that they are wielding that power and that it potentially causes them to make very, very bad, very violent decisions against citizens of this country and beyond. I just feel like you were like if someone wrote you and said, hey, Bob, you know, you were asked that question, you didn't respond to it. And my wife went out and now she has been critically injured and she thought that nothing could happen, that would weigh on you forever. And I think you don't want that.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of And you know, Janet, we talked about this for an hour before I even made the final decision to do it. And the hardest part for me about anything like this is I am very much, I try to remove my opinions, emotions, and feelings out of things and try to look at facts and law. I knew before doing this episode that the answers to some of the questions are going to be very uncomfortable. And I know that they're going to upset people. And that's precise, kind of right along the lines of what I was telling you before. It's like, I know if I say, listen, ICE is a legitimate law enforcement agent, just that alone is going to upset people. And it's not my intention. It's never my intention to upset people. But I also can't, in good conscience, pretend that that's not the reality. And it makes it very difficult. It would make, believe me, for, you know, and maybe none of this is worth it, but for me, it would be so much easier for me to say, let me just have another podcaster on and not do any of this or not even talk about any of this. So just know that, you know, me doing this is out of a deep, what I feel, ethical obligation to answer those questions when they're asked of me as best I can.
Let me move into this. All of these are very connected, so it's not like we're jumping around on topics. Similar to the last question, some listeners really took offense with your characterization, as you just said, is legitimate. Someone even said that saying they're legitimate is condoning fascism. So if you want to draw a little bit more of a circle around what you meant by the legitimacy, I would say it probably would behoove you to remove past administrations from the argument altogether. Maybe just make it about today. What would the court say, or what would, you know, like, what do you mean when you say legitimate? Do you mean emotionally legitimate? Do you mean ethically legitimate? Or do you mean legally, on paper, legitimate?
That's exactly right. And I actually, the person that said that was an email. I emailed them back and explained this to them too. But no, when I say that they're legitimate, what I mean, like, by the law, they are a legitimate police force. They have federal law enforcement authority. That's literally all I meant. It wasn't me saying, I think what they're doing is legitimate. I think what they stand for is legitimate. I just meant specifically by the law to say they're not a legit. To me, when somebody said they're not a legitimate law enforcement agency, that means that you believe that they're not a real federal law enforcement agent and you don't have to listen to them, that they can't do anything to you, that they don't have any authority or power. And that's not the case. That's entirely what I was saying. And that's it.
I think too many people envision them as like a neighborhood watch instead of a law enforcement agency. And I think that's the problem is, you know, we all in this day and age, you know, the neighborhood watch can't do anything. They're this group of citizens that are together to tell the police that there's bad things going on. But your verbiage of legitimate is strictly legal. You're not saying their opinion. Neighborhood Watch does great things. They can't legally arrest you. And I think that's the difference.
Yeah, it's just very, very simply, they do have legitimate legal authority. And two things can be true at the same time. They can be a legitimate law enforcement agency and be doing illegitimate things.
Right. That makes sense. And like I said, to me, what's, again, with my own triggers and all of that, to me, what's important about that, or one of the things that's important about that is that unfortunately, the more actual legitimate legal power is technically behind them, the more scary that makes them to me.
Right.
So I think it's important to look at that right in the eye, not because I agree that it should be that way, but because the more power someone actually has, the more they are likely to bump right up against that line and cross it. So I want to know where that line technically is.
Well, and I think that it would almost a better episode name for the episode might have been Know Your Enemy, right? It's not let your enemy do what you whatever they want. It's just because of the tactics they're employing and the things that they're doing, as we saw with Renee Good, these things can go beyond, well, you could be detained or arrested. I mean, they are, you know, in that incident, they escalated things to, and there's been other incidents where it's led to gunfire. That never should have happened. And that's not to say, well, well, that's our fault for getting involved in causing that to happen, because that's not the case, and that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's a real fear for me that that is what's going to happen.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And there are some people who are like, then let it, because that's where we are. And that's, I understand
and
that.
And that's
argument.
Fine.
I understand that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's just circle back. You mentioned that people, you know, you mentioned I didn't say Renee Good's name. I know you did not mean that in any sort of disrespect. But people are like, hey, Bob, if you, the second you talked about it at all, that potentially created a sense of responsibility that other people might put upon you to really give a full analysis of the incident. Why, you know, why aren't you giving that analysis? What are your thoughts on that?
This is the problem with that. I don't think anybody really wants that. I'll share my thought. I've been watching all the videos. From what I've seen, the officer shooting her, in my opinion, based on what I know, was not a good shoot. It should not have happened. I do not think, based on, and this is, you know, I'm not an expert, I'm not a lawyer, I don't have all the evidence, but I think I've got most of the evidence that we think we all have, most of the evidence in the videos that are out there about, you know, to see what happened from just about every angle. And I do not, based on my, you know, training just from the, you know, I've literally taken use of deadly force classes in my, you know, I'm studying for a criminal justice degree. I'm taking all these classes and reviewing all these laws and learning where all these things are at. And I feel pretty comfortable saying that deadly force was not warranted. There's an argument that maybe could be made about the first shot. The second two, in my opinion, are inexcusable completely. But this is the part that gets uncomfortable is there's no way for me to really break this down like I would any case looking at actual actions and how they relate to the law without it sounding like I'm saying this is Renee Good's fault. No matter how many times I say it is not her fault, she did not deserve to be shot, and that is 100% how I feel about it. But the incident from the beginning to end, you had ICE agents that were driving down the street. Nobody knows what they were doing. They were stuck in the snow, from what I understand. And then you had a bunch of people that are protesting, that are, you know, honking their horns at them and yelling at them and stopping them and trying to obstruct them. And then when Renee Good took and parked her car sideways to block it, I think that met the legal definition of she's now obstructing an operation. And that's why I don't want to talk about it, because I can't stress enough, that doesn't equal you shoot her. But as far as point by point by point, as you went through, there was obstruction there. She was given lawful order that she did, in order to, told to move and get out. But it gets so much more complicated and nuanced than that, because there was also conflicting orders being told her. You know, you had one, you know, one person saying to move, one saying get out of the car. The whole thing, you know, just spiraled very, very, very quickly. That's the best I can give you for it, is the part that I think matters the most was deadly force warranted? And in my opinion, it definitely was not. And even if it was warranted, if there's something there I'm not seeing, and there was a reason, and there's probably an argument to be made in court for some way, one side or the other, for that first shot, I don't see how anybody can excuse the second two shots. That's my feelings on the whole thing. The reason that I brought it up in this episode, and the reason that I want to, that it's relevant to the things we're talking about, was when it simply just comes back to risk. And again, I know I've said it 10 times already, the risk shouldn't be that you get shot. But I don't know, because I don't know what she knew or what she was thinking, but I don't know if Renee Good was aware that she was taking a risk of being detained, arrested, and prosecuted for obstruction. And I don't know if she knew that, if she would have taken the same steps she took. And I'm not saying that she shouldn't have. I'm not saying she didn't have a right to exercise her constitutional right to protest. I just don't know if she knew that that was a legitimate law enforcement agency, and that they did have the authority to arrest her, if she would have done the same thing. Or did she see the meme or infographic going around social media that said, ICE has no authority over you as citizens, they can't detain you, they can't arrest you, they can't do any of that? And was that what was in her mind? That I don't know where else to go from that. There's a reason I didn't get into it, and this is why, because it's just such a very, 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 very difficult conversation to have without people hearing a word and saying, oh, well, you're saying this, because everybody seems to, not everybody, but a lot of people just seem to want to put you into a box. It's like, if you don't fall in line with this complete narrative, then you have to be over here. And if you don't fall in line with that complete narrative, then you have to be over there. And to me, like this, there was just so much that went wrong here. It's very difficult for me to break down in a public way like this. And I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't have 15 people ask me to.
Yeah. Yeah. I see all the comments in particular from some Amy's who are bringing up some ideas that perhaps there was more information about the victim. And I am going to say victim for sure, that maybe you didn't, like she may have known all of this, and if some people know that and some people don't, or you didn't know that, or, you know, and if it's true, then maybe that changes the picture of what's, you know, kind of how you see it or what you think.
And that may very well be true. Like, I see people saying that she had training. I know that she was, and I've read that she had some training in how to deal with ICE, so she may very well have known that. And she may well have accepted that risk, and that's fine. But the reason I cited it as a recent relevant example and not dug into the details of it was because I don't know that everyone else knows that. As a matter of fact, I know for a fact many people don't know that risk.
So lastly, people took issue with you saying that protesting in the way that Renee Good did isn't effective or worth it, and you ended the episode by saying that what you're doing is suggesting there might be a better way. Listener Amy, who does happen to be an attorney, I'm not sure if it's one of the Amy's in the chat. If it is, let me know. Articulated this particularly well, suggesting that history has shown that peaceful protests like we saw during the civil rights movement can have long-term societal effects. She's concerned that, you know, you're suggesting that we should just stop protesting. That was one of my main concerns was, I said, you end this episode and I think it's going to read to people, whether you intend it to or not, that you're telling people not to do what Renee did, and you are telling people that there is a better way, and then you're just leaving everyone hanging without any suggestion as to what that better way might be, and that I was worried that that was going to make people feel helpless or upset.
Yeah, and as we discussed, after you kind of pointed that out, I thought about it for a few days and tried to think of like what suggestions I had. But let me first address Amy. And I believe Amy is in the chat now. Yeah, she is. That's the same Amy that's in the chat now. This is kind of what I mean when it wasn't just Amy, just one who is a lawyer and articulated this beautifully in her Facebook comment. But a lot of people like hear what I'm saying and then tell me what I said or tell me what I meant. And it's not what I meant. I didn't say that she shouldn't peacefully protest or that you shouldn't peacefully protest or that anybody shouldn't protest in any way they feel fit. I didn't say that. I didn't mean that. As I said, and I've said it many times here, what I was trying to articulate was just simply to know the risks that you're taking. If your protest is obstructing something they're trying to do, then you are taking a risk that you may be detained, arrested, and convicted for that. That's just a risk. And as I said in the episode, I've said here many times, if you're like, that is worth it to me, I think that this is important enough that I'm willing to take that risk, then I think you should take that risk. But that's not for me to decide. That's your own moral compass to decide what risks you're willing to take. My only intention was to clarify that ICE does have legitimate law enforcement powers. Obstructing them can result in your arrest. Just because a social media infographic says that it won't result in that doesn't make that true. That's it. That's my entire point. And like I said, at the end, so part of what Amy pointed out and what others have pointed out is they really took offense to me saying that this type of protest, the obstruction of ICE, is ineffective. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But again, like for me, I'm always looking at a cost benefit. I mean, to give you some perspective, I'm sure I probably said this before, maybe not, but like in my years as a firefighter and an instructor in the fire service, I developed a program called Systematic Risk Management that I traveled the country and taught. And it was a matrix on how for fire officers to assess a situation, quickly identify what is the risk and what is the benefit to determine. In that case, it was, do I commit personnel to go inside of a burning building, risking their life? And what constitutes that risk? Like what benefits are worth that risk, right? So like, understand, this isn't like me making like a social commentary. It's just the way my brain works. Like, is the benefit worth the risk always? From my perspective, I have yet to see, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, I've yet to see where ICE or any law enforcement, let's just get out of it, any law enforcement agency is going to go do a thing. They're going to arrest someone. They're going to go, whatever, they're going to arrest someone where citizens put themselves in the way to stop that from happening. And the result is that the person doesn't get arrested. Generally, the result is the people who got in the way get arrested, and then the person still gets arrested. And so that's all I meant by effective. Now, the reason I wanted to make sure I highlighted what Amy said, because there is a bigger societal impact over time. And that's something that I, you know, truthfully didn't really consider, but it's a good point. When I said that, I'm talking about if there's just not a world that I'm aware of where police are going, any law enforcement agency is going to do something, and then citizens get in the way and do everything they can to stop them from doing that. Something, they're doing something bad, right? That after the fact, they still go ahead and do it anyway. And so the only suggestion that I had is to do, you know, what I've done is to donate for me, I don't know what to do. And that's why I didn't put because I don't know the answer. That's what's so frustrating about all of this. Is it's heartbreaking, it's horrific, it needs to fucking change, but I don't know what the fucking answer is. What I do is I donate. There are several, I've done like five of them in the last week. What was the last one? Immigration Law Center of Minnesota, I just donated money to. And they're an organization that when somebody gets arrested or detained by ICE, that they can call their hotline, tell them the situation, and they provide free legal counsel to those people. Like, to me, that's doing, to me, that feels like I'm doing something. And I've, over the weeks, and I've done it in the past before this, but more so in these last weeks, it just Googled and searched for organizations like that that can help. Because that was, it's like this whole, when I say there's another way, like, I don't know. And maybe this is more effective. Maybe it'll be more effective over time. But so this situation happened, and in the days following, people raised, I believe it was $1.5 million for Rene Good's partner. And then the other side raised nearly $1 million for the police officer. It's $2.5 million people raised to give to these individuals after this. And maybe it's a really cynical way to look at it, but I'm thinking, it's like, If we have $2.5 million to throw around, give it to attorneys that can help people. You know, like, that's, and like, maybe it's cynical, maybe it's naive, but it's like people are willing to open their pocketbooks after the fact for these people. It's like, what I do is what I do, which is I open mind to places where I think that it will be effective. So I apologize if it upsets people by me saying that I don't think these types of protests are effective. It's not an assault on you. It's not an assault on your constitutional right to protest. It's just, to me, when I see that people put themselves in such harm's way from a legal standpoint, and then also the fact that, as we're all kind of acknowledging, this law enforcement agency seems to have gone completely rogue and they're shooting people. So that risk is even higher than it even should be. And then at the end of the day, they still carry out the operation they were going to carry out anyway. That when I said, I'm just suggesting that maybe there's a better way, it's exactly what I meant. That maybe there's a better way. It feels like there should be a better way. I don't know what the other way is. If I knew, I would tell you.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's just very hard about that right now is that it just feels to people that some people feel that we may be at the point where everything that whether it's true or not, and I am not making a value judgment whether it is or not by saying whether it's true or not, so please don't assign that to me. Whether it's true or not, it can feel like everything has broken down to the point where none of that is fast enough, none of that is effective enough, because if people have lost hope in the government, if they've lost hope in the system in every way, then that is when you are talking about civil war. And part of civil war may come in the form of someone putting their body between a stranger and law enforcement. And that is also very scary to me. I think I also wonder if someone had said to Rene, and I am very emotional about this, are you ready to die today? I don't know what her answer would have been. And I don't blame her for one second for doing what she did. But I do think that if we are at a place where we all need to ask ourselves that question, even exercising our rights to peacefully protest, taking all of that scenario out of it and just talking about anyone just not breaking the law or not doing anything that can even be conceived as breaking the law. If we're in a place where we all have to ask ourselves, am I ready to die today? That's really fucking depressing. And a lot of people feel like that's where we are. So there are people who feel that, you know, it's not useful to ask about whether there's a better way because we're past that. I'm not saying that's how I feel every day, every moment, but I do feel that way sometimes. And I'm very worried that for many of us, it's getting more and more in that direction. And I am very scared of that because I do feel that there are places and moments and times when regular people who aren't law enforcement, who just are bakers and moms and dads and teachers, are going to feel like all you have is the community that you trust and nothing else. And it's really, really, really hard to wrap your head around that. And I think that's why this is all, what's one of the many reasons why this is so triggering to people. It's very scary out there. And that's why I was afraid that when you said there might be a better way, that people were going to be like, well, then what the fuck is it, Bob? Else, what else are you doing? And I know, and I love you. And I know that's not what you were trying to do. But I was very scared that people were going to feel like that. That's all.
Sorry, guys, I don't mean
to get so emotional, but this is very hard. And I wanted to be here for this episode because I didn't want anyone to think that we weren't thinking about these things.
Yeah, and I very much appreciate that. And I do want to add one thing, that the best thing that we can do, I think, to change what's happening is a change in administration, an election, a change in Congress. And we have one coming this year. And that's why I'm always, and it's never popular. It's never popular from either side. When I start talking about like strategy, like what's going to be, what's going to work, what's going to make a change, what's going to persuade people, because I desperately want, however we're persuading people, to be effective enough that this could all change. This could all change in the fall, in these midterm elections that could put a stop to a lot of this. And that's why it's not because I disagree with you or I'm not on your side. It's because I'm just a very, I try to work in a very logical, strategic way. And I'm like, well, how, I hate even fucking talking about any of this stuff because this is not a show about politics, but how do we not end this? In the last presidential election, I watched and observed how the Democrats fought. I watched how that fought went down on social media and how they put in what they were doing. And what everyone was doing in good faith, hoping was going to be effective. And then I watched it fail fucking miserably. I watched an election that I think most everyone was stunned and shocked at the result of it. And so for me, I step back and I'm like, how did this fucking happen? And then I, from a very strategic, logical standpoint, it could be completely misguided and wrong. I'm no expert in fucking anything, but I'm like, well, that, think of, it for a sports analogy, but like, okay, we had this play that we thought was going to work, that was going to be the most effective play, and we ran it over and over again, and it didn't work. It caused the opposite effect of what we were hoping for. So I want us to regroup and think like, okay, well, let's come up with a different play. Let's come up with something different, because ultimately what's going to matter is that. And I do not claim or propose that I'm the expert in all this. I just want to see things get better so that we don't feel so hopeless. And I have my thoughts on what I think will work and won't work. And sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. And sometimes people agree, sometimes they disagree. It upsets people. I don't know. It's rambling, but I'm just trying to be as transparent and open and honest with you guys as I can. I hope at the very least, any of you listening know where I'm coming from and where my heart is at, and regardless if you agree or disagree with me.
Whew. Okay. Zach, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that covered about 80% of the questions.
Oh, my thoughts
and
on
we
this...
have more to talk about. We have some more to talk about, some very specific questions after this too, just so you guys know.
So my thoughts for the first 75% of this episode is what I'm going to talk about. And I think this episode was a really good episode. And I think the issue that lies at the moment is we're losing sight of the other great information that was put out in this episode. There was so many good so many good things that were put out there that I truly didn't know. The idea of the Miranda rights. I knew the Miranda rights. You know, there's a lot of us that didn't understand the Miranda rights. The whole idea of a lawful order where a police officer can order you out of a vehicle and you have to, that's a lawful order and you have to do that. Didn't know that. You know what I mean? I know I'm not speaking just for myself. I know there's a lot of listeners out here that needed this episode. I'm just afraid that a lot of this is being lost. There's a lot of great information in this episode that we can all learn from. But
yeah, and I,
with that being said, thank you for putting out this episode. As tough as this was on you, on us, I, as a listener, appreciate the effort you put in to allowing us to have the knowledge to move forward in this.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads. Yeah, and I do want to point out, too, that I think I said this being the episode, this feels like it's already been so long ago since we started it, that I don't want it to seem like the feedback from the episode was negative. It wasn't. It was overwhelmingly positive. But there were, the people that had a bad taste in their mouth or questions like that, I felt like that was at least this part up front like needed to be addressed. I wouldn't be doing any of us justice if I didn't address them. But yeah, there were lots of sentiment like what you just shared, Zach, too, about you know the rest of it, what it means, the difference between being detained and being arrested, and when Miranda's triggered and when it's not and what it means, things like that. So yeah, hopefully that all was useful.
And I think some of my opinions, so the little bit of my opinion that I'll give on the last segment is I feel like I'm too close to the situation. I'm too close to you. I know you too well that I understand where you were coming from so that I didn't see it the way that some of these listeners see. And I'm not disregarding their feelings or their legitimacy of what they're saying. Because I do see it now that they're putting it out. But as a listener, when I listen to it, I'm too close to you to I know where you're coming from. So I understood where you're coming from. And I never had those thoughts of, oh, this is bad or this, you know, that's truly why I'm not giving an opinion on that last part, because I got it. I got what you were saying. But again, you're my best friend. We hang out. We live by each other. I understand the way you think. I've understood the way you've thought for a long time. And I understand, when you say you're not putting your opinion in there, I know you're not putting in your opinion in there. Because we have talks about opinions and we have talks about non-opinions. And I know when you're sharing your opinion. And when you say you're not sharing your opinion, you're truly not. And I think people don't understand that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that because that is not just this episode, but a lot of times it's frustrating for me. I say something on the podcast and then everybody tells me what I meant by that, or like they assume what I meant or where it came from. It's like, I just meant what I said. I just meant exactly what I said.
Yeah.
I guess I've already made my feelings clear on the episode. I've managed to shoehorn everything in there. Now, all that being said, we did receive a lot of very positive feedback on the episode. That doesn't mean the people who had positive feedback are right and the people who had negative feedback or criticisms were wrong. That's not what anyone's saying. Seeing some, positive feedback in the comments as well. Thank you for that. In addition to the criticism.
JB, I'm going to interrupt for just a second too.
Sure, please.
Bob already said this, but just to reiterate it, people were very civil about this. So even the quote unquote negative feedback was constructive. And that is a huge win for our community as a whole.
I agree. And it made me very emotional when you said that at the top of the episode. And I was like, I probably am going to cry in this episode. I can't start crying at the top. But that gave me so much hope. It just gave me so much hope. So we really appreciate you guys.
Yeah. And just so you know, I put this outline together and I was like, I think I picked out enough to where we can keep this under an hour. And we're just now getting to the listener questions. 53 minutes in.
I know.
So if my answers seem short, it's because I yapped for too long.
Anna says, thank you for this. So this is kind of Anna stepping in, standing in for a lot of people who really appreciated it. Anna says, thank you for this episode and the clear explanation. The bus analogy really worked for me in the clearest terms. Yeah, Anna, I appreciated that too.
Yeah. And I hope just to reiterate that. Thank you, Anna. Like that really summed up the whole thing, what I was saying. And the reason I chose that analogy is because everyone could agree that if you step into traffic and push a child away from getting hit by a bus, everyone can agree that that is a good thing to do. I don't think there's anybody that's like, that's the wrong thing to do. It's the right thing to do. But there's a choice that you have to make if you're willing to sacrifice yourself for that. And that was, I chose that analogy, very deliberately to try to frame it in a way that, I'm not saying what this you're doing is bad. It's a good thing. It's just recognizing and making a decision on risk.
I love this next one. Jill and several other listeners asked some version of this. What if you encounter police, law enforcement, and you genuinely fear for your safety and or are not convinced that the person giving you what appears to be a lawful order is actually law enforcement? Is it okay to call 911 to get verification on that?
Yeah. By the way, this is going to be kind of a theme through a lot of these answers is the answers suck. So the answer is yes. Like you should be able to call. The only recommendation I would give is I would make sure that I'm very clear about I'm not trying to disappear. I need to see some identification. I need to see a badge. I'm just going to call and verify that you are who you say you are. That should be okay. The problem is depending on who the cop is or what agency they're from, how they're going to react to that. This is the way, and I did a bunch of research on this. I went into like the textbooks and stuff that I've had to do for my class, and I searched case law on this. The thing about it is, first of all, I want to point out, because some people ask in their versions of this question, do ICE agents carry badges? Yes, they're required to carry a badge and an ID. They should be identifiable. Case law shows from everything I found that everything is about reasonableness, like if it goes to court, right? So if you're like, I'm not following because I don't believe you're a cop, it all depends. Like if you're playing a game, you're probably going to lose it. Meaning like, I know you're an officer, but I'm going to pretend like I don't think you're an officer. It's going to go, eventually that's going to end in front of a judge, and courts pretty consistently, from what I've read, hold that, if a reasonable person should have known that was a law enforcement, they showed you their badge, and you're just like, well, I thought it was a fake badge or something, you're probably going to lose that. But if you're genuinely afraid, then it just turns into this really horrible, because what we're talking about, I know some of the listeners are talking about, like, if it's, you know, if it, an ICE agent doing something that they shouldn't do, but let's get out of that context for a minute, right? So, because some of the questions were just like, what if I'm on a back road and someone pulls me over? You know, you can buy red lights on at galls.com and put them on your car and make them look like you look like a cop and buy a costume that looks like a cop. And I don't believe you're a cop and I'm genuinely scared for my life. What do I do? That's there's not a great answer to that. Because the answer is, yeah, you should be able to verify, you should be able to call 911. But if that's a genuine bad guy impersonating an officer, that can get real. And that's where all the problem is, all of these laws. So this is like emergence of self-defense laws and of, like, you know, lawful order and police authority laws kind of like merging together. The problem is all of those laws assume that law enforcement is acting appropriately. And they all assume that this is a very clear-cut situation, right? There's not like a clear law that says, well, if it looks like a Halloween costume, you can run. So unfortunately, I don't have a great answer for you. I wish I did, because I searched long, and I mentioned before the show, I spent 2.5 hours researching to try to answer some of your guys' questions as best that I can. And everything that I found was just that that is a very, very gray area. So I can only tell you what I would do in that situation would be to try to be very clear about my, you know, what I'm doing. You know, I'm not resisting. I need to see verification. I need to see ID. I'm just going to call and verify, you know, and I try to be very clear, keep my hands where they can see them, and try to do my best to keep the situation from escalating. Then if it does escalate from there, I don't know. It's bad. It's a bad situation. Because there isn't a clear law about it. It's all going to come down to it. Best case scenario, you're wrong and they are a cop. That's the best case scenario.
Right.
Because then you go to court and you have to make a case that a reasonable person wouldn't have known that was a cop. And if you can make that argument, then you win. If you can't make it, you lose. The worst case scenario is it really isn't a cop and they really are just impersonating a cop. I don't know. I wish I had a better answer for you.
Well,
but it's a great question, Jill, yeah. And all the other people that asked a very similar version of that. It's a great question. I wish I had a great answer.
And I also love this one that we're having Jenna stand in for other folks who ask similar questions. She asks, what is a person supposed to do if the order isn't lawful, like being told to leave the scene when you're standing across the street, or if you're getting conflicting orders? Like some officers or agents are telling you to get out of here, some telling you to get out of the car. I think we all know where that came from. She says, the cynic in me feels like right now there's nothing we can do to stay safe. I hear you.
Yeah, I hear you too. And again, this is another one where it's all going to come down to how you can make the argument for taking the actions you took. And that's something a lawyer would have to advise you on. You know, and of course, you don't have a lawyer sitting in the passenger seat of your car or standing next to you in that situation to advise you. All I can tell you is if you're detained because of something like this, because you don't follow that order, because you don't feel it's lawful, then you're going to end up in court and have to make the case for why it wasn't lawful. And that's all going to be handled by lawyers. So yeah, it's in the conflicting orders part is another big piece of it. But all of that is something that gets litigated in court. And that's what's, and like I prefaced this, a lot of these answers are frustrating because there isn't a clear answer. You know, there's no law that says if you get conflicting orders, you don't have to follow either one, or you should follow the first one or follow the second one, or like that law doesn't exist. You know, so again, all of the laws that I've been able to find are written assuming that everyone is acting in good faith. So when someone, especially particularly on the law enforcement side, isn't acting in good faith, it crosses into this really, really difficult gray area.
Well, and that's something that you're running across in your work all the time. That,
yeah,
like, laws have to be passed. I mean, Miranda's called Miranda because a specific thing happened.
Right.
Where
Ernesto
people were
Miranda.
Not acting in good faith.
Mm-hmm.
We keep having to adjust further and further away from original broken system laws that were like, what? Police? Never done a bad thing ever.
Right.
Okay. Moving on to JC wants to know if you can post the case citations and statutory provisions you relied on to put together the episode.
Aha, a question I could answer thoroughly. Yes. And by the way, this because of JC, this question prompted me to. So I had the way I'd broken this down, I literally tackled this episode the same way I tackle all of my papers that I have to write for my criminal justice classes, where I went through and I found all the sources and then read all the source material and then broke everything down. So I kind of had my own little bibliography, like an APA citation reference list already. So when I saw JC's comment, I thought that's a great idea because I'm not going to sit here for an hour and explain every single case law. So what I did is I put all that into a Word document and I put, for the different elements of this episode, I kind of highlighted in bold, okay, for this element dealing with Fifth Amendment, Fourth Amendment, here's some relevant case law and what that case law did and how it affects it. So I posted that. So if you go to our website and go to the season 18 case documents in the episode one folder, you'll find that document that has everything in there. And I encourage too, Nick, I know we have a lot of lawyers that listen to stuff to look through that. And if you're like, well, this is wrong, this is like great, I would love to hear that and be able to correct it. Cause like I said, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a complete layman because I've studied this stuff. I've studied, 100 hours of this, 100 credit hours of criminal justice practice from the police officer's perspective, because in order for me to get my criminal justice degree, most of the classes that I've had to take up till now, where now I'm in my elective phase where I'm just finishing things out, most of them are based around being a patrol officer. So they're based around when is deadly force warranted? When is de-escalation necessary? How do you handle these situations from a law enforcement perspective? So that's what I'm drawing on.
Katie says, what are the rules around an officer bringing a dog for a sniff if you refuse a search? You'll often see someone say no when the officer asks to search your car. Then they call for a canine to get that search anyway. I don't think they can prolong or delay the traffic stop waiting on a canine, although I'm sure they find ways around that too. But do they have to call? But do they have to have probable cause to call the canine?
So this is I can't speak really thoroughly on this, but I do. And somebody, if somebody can find it, I had somebody on in some previous season that broke this law down thoroughly. And explained it thoroughly how it works. I cannot remember for life me which attorney it was that did that. But from my understanding of it, and from my memory of that, and I had to write about this as part of a paper at some point. You'll see the term a lot, and I think that Amy and other attorneys in our chat will agree. There's the term reasonableness comes in a lot with a lot of these civil rights issues, and from my memory. They can't hold you on the side of the road. They can only they can hold you there at a stop for a quote reasonable amount of time is the way I remember it. So if they're well, I suspect you won't let me search your car. And then there's different methods of what they can do with the dog, right? So a dog can, and I don't remember the terminology, but there's a type of search they can do. Basically the dog can walk around. If the dog alerts, then that would trigger probable cause for a more detailed search. It's something like that, but I would just recommend you look into it further or find the episode where I had an attorney that explained it. But there is something like that where they can during the court, but what they can't do is, they can't, hold you for 3 hours in the side of the road while you wait for a dog. They can't hold you for more than a reasonable amount of time for the dog to get there.
Scary, so subjective. In different eras in culture and time, it would have been reasonable to, it's it's culturally reasonable for me as a white man to stop this African-American man because I don't like the way he looks. That's reasonable for this time, this era, which is terrifying. Okay. Jill says, and we just have a couple more. We can zip through these if need be. Jill asks, is it legal for a law enforcement officer to tell a person they have a warrant for a search when they do not have that warrant?
Again, this is very, very nuanced, and it's something that happens in court. One thing I was surprised about when I researched this, I was always under the impression that an officer, if they had a warrant to, say, search your house, that they had to present you with the warrant. You could, if they say, we have a warrant to search your house, you can say, let me see the warrant that shows the scope and everything they have to do. I thought that was the case. That is not the case.
From whatever.
Yeah. But the warrant needs to actually exist. So if they come in and say, I have a warrant to search your house, and they, now it gets, it's, if it's a warrant for an arrest, that's obvious, you don't expect them to show you the paper, right? But if it's a warrant to search, you're expecting to see that. Here's the thing is, if they say they have a warrant and they don't produce it and they go in and search, then anything they, if there isn't actually a warrant, then nothing they find will be admissible. So it comes, it's kind of like the Miranda stuff, it comes into admissibility, right? So if they were to lie, and come in and find evidence, they can't use the evidence because it violated your Fourth Amendment rights. So is it legal? Now, there are situations like, you know, can they lie about having a warrant? I mean, there's also case law from the Supreme Court says they can lie to you during interrogation. Ugh. So during interrogation, they can say, we had a warrant for your house and we went in and we found XYZ. They can do that. But if they actually go and tell you they have a warrant when they don't and search and find something, then they won't be able to use it.
Well, let me just tell you what's terrifying about that and then we'll move on because it's so cynical and there's nothing we can do about this right now. But in my mind, when I hear you say that, what I hear is, cool, I'll be real excited for 2 years later when somehow I've been kept in jail for 2 years because they found some
right.
coke or whatever. And we're like, we got her. And and the justice system is so broken that I could potentially just be sitting in a frickin' cell waiting for the right thing to happen is awful and terrifying.
Yeah. And you would hope that an attorney right off the bat. I will say that this is extremely rare from at least from like my training as a law enforcement officer, that I'm never going to be a law enforcement officer, but the education I have in it, like most wouldn't do this because they know they won't be able to use it later. And somebody did ask a question, said, what if they lie, say they have a warrant and you respond, then fine, go ahead and search. And then they find stuff. Did you give them? So I did find case law specifically about that. And no, it is still the courts have held that that is not an informed consent. It's coerced because they lied to you about a warrant that didn't exist.
Well, that's good ish. Susan says, I admire your work, but you have overstepped here. In no way is this not legal advice. You cannot give blanket statements like this because laws and ordinances and the processes and procedures that surround them do indeed vary between jurisdictions. What's true in your corner of Michigan may not be how the law reads in my neck of Missouri. It's pesky things like jurisdiction and precedent that make these blanket statements invalid. Please stop giving legal advice and pretending you aren't by saying this is not legal advice. Love ya.
Love you too, Susan. And I did comment on Patreon too, Susan. I don't know if she's seen it yet, but I promised her that I would address it here. So there's two elements to this. One is the legal advice. I want to make very clear, it's not legal advice what I've done. And I'm saying that not based on my opinion, not because I said it. Like I have lawyers that for 11 years tell me what I can say and can't say and what the difference between legal advice and educational content or even entertainment content. There is a very strict definition of what that is. Me telling you that from my education and experience, this is how I interpret the law is not legal advice. Is if someone were to ask me like, hey, and I get these questions all the time, by the way, people say, like, hey, I'm in this situation. What should I do? I cannot answer that question. Nobody who is not an attorney can answer that question, because if you tell them what to do and they do it, and then have that, like you as a non-lawyer have given non-legal advice. So I just want to be clear on the definition. Like I'm not just saying it's not legal advice, and because I said it's not. I mean, it's literally not. I'm not required to do so, but I do so anyway. Is to tell you not only am I not a lawyer, I'm not giving you legal advice, but I also tell you like where my interpretation is coming from. Like in my case, it's from, you know, I've spent 11 years working in the space. I've got, you know, I've spent, you know, 100 hours studying criminal justice. That's where my perspective is coming from. This is just my interpretation of what these laws mean. That's not me giving you legal. So from a very legal standpoint, it's not legal advice. As far as like the jurisdictional stuff, I did ask Susan, and she might get back with me. We might share it again later, but I don't know where jurisdiction comes in, because I kind of went back and looked through like everything I talked about is all federal law. It's all like everything you see are there Supreme Court cases, federal district court cases, legal precedent, constitutional amendments. None of the things that I addressed, as far as I know, has anything to do with jurisdictional. No jurisdiction can take away, you know, your right to not have illegal search and seizure, right? You know, things like that. Or no jurisdiction can say, well, we don't do Miranda here, right? So if I did state something that can be changed by jurisdiction, then then I apologize. I'm happy to correct that. But I don't think that I did. And again, also, like, you should never, ever take a non-lawyer podcaster's word for what is legal and what is not legal. Like you, if you're really in a situation and you really need to make a decision for yourself, then that should be handled through an actual attorney.
Got it. Sue says, regarding being detained by police, when is it appropriate to ask, am I under arrest? And what happens if the answer is no? Is the detainee free to go?
That's a great question, and it's nuanced, and I'm glad that Sue asked that. Because the question isn't, am I under arrest? The question is, am I being detained? And that was one of the things that I was trying to make clear in the episode, and I want to really reiterate now, is Miranda is triggered by being detained and you're being interrogated. Those two things must be present in order for Miranda to be triggered, where they're required to read you your Miranda rights and for you to acknowledge that you have those rights. You can be detained without being arrested. So you can say, am I under arrest? And they say no. That doesn't necessarily mean you can get up and walk away. The question is, am I being detained? That's the question that you need to ask. And if the answer to that is no, absolutely, you can get up and walk away. If they tell you very clearly, no, you are not being detained. For me, my next question would be, then am I free to leave? In the response, you'll probably get to be something like, well, if you want to look guilty, I mean, I suppose, but we're just trying to get you to help or da, 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 da. They're probably not going to be like, yes, you are free to leave. They might. But yeah, that's the question. Am I being detained? Am I free to leave? Not am I being arrested, because that's a different thing.
And I will say, am I free to leave and therefore become your number one suspect?
Right, yeah. May I do that?
Know the risks. Still do it. Kathy has a question about the training of ICE agents. She says, I mean, they are not really trained like law enforcement, are they? To me, she says, they seem like a bunch of bullies with guns who know there are going to be no consequences for their actions. And Sue also asked if all ICE agents are vetted.
Yeah, so the answer to the question is, now, again, two things can be true at the same time. They could be a bunch of bullies and thugs that don't think there's any consequences. But the answer to the question is, yeah, there are. Now, and some of these things, I think, are being shortened and laxed right now because they're trying to put more on. But even, I even looked at, because you see the posts now that are putting up where they're trying to recruit ICE agents, a requirement. Generally, an ICE agent is required to have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. They do have to go through psychological testing and vetting. And then there's a 13-week academy, which is actually far and above what it takes to be just like a patrolman police officer. Most police agencies, they prefer a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. It's not required. I mean, you can, like, get, you know, at 21 years old, just go get a job, go to the police academy and take a job as a cop. So, yes, they are trained in the, gosh, I forgot the term for it, but the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, I think is what it's called. And it's a 13-week course. Generally, they're required to have a bachelor's degree. I think there are exceptions to that, but generally, they're required to have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. If you look at, like, those posts, you know, that when it lists the requirements to get in, and there is a vetting process. And that doesn't mean that the other part of your statement's not true also.
Yeah, I guess I just, again, in these cynical times, I just hope that there are watchdogs that are actually, like, making sure that all happens. And then last question, Monica has, it's not even a question. Monica has a suggestion for a season 18 episode. Season 3 of Proof starts this week, and the case is in Kalamazoo, Michigan.
My favorite question to answer. I agree. That would be a great episode. And because of that, on Thursday this week, I am interviewing Susan Simpson for this Sunday's episode. So we can all take a breath. I can step back into my normal lane. And this is so in my lane because it's my friend Susan. It's about a podcast that I love about wrongful convictions in a town an hour away from me where my daughter goes to college. So Susan and I were chatting about, actually, my daughter goes to college there. My wife graduated from there and my dad graduated from there, all from Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo. So Susan has assigned me to talk to my dad, if he remembers, because he was living in Kalamazoo during one of the murders that she's going to be discussing. So I'm going to be talking to him about that tomorrow night. So right, that's what's coming on Sunday, is an interview with Susan Simpson about the new season of Proof that I'm sure we're all super duper excited about. Patrons, that is going to be, I don't remember what time, actually. Oh, 3 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday. They'll be, that stream will be available for any of the patrons who want to be live when I interview Susan. For everybody else, that episode will drop on Sunday. And I just want to tell all of you from the bottom, I know this was a super uncomfortable conversation. Again, I want to thank everybody for the honest feedback, and more importantly, for the civilized conversation and feedback that we've all had. I love every one of you guys, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. Co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited, no purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.